Welcome to the College Baseball Nation podcast. My name is John Peters, and I'm joined by Kyle McKelvey. This week on the podcast, we are introducing our brand new Top 50, breaking down all of the action from week 12 and talking about ACC baseball. Let's talk college baseball. Kyle, how's it going?
Pretty good. If you hear any tweeting in the background, it is not me on Twitter. It is not me outside. There is a bird stuck in our chimney, and I do not know how to get it out.
Oh, man. Start a fire.
I guess. Yeah.
I don't know if that's a good idea in like springtime in Texas. That's how to get your home pretty hot, probably.
Yeah. We need a chimney sweep to come out and clean it up and figure some things out there.
I have like a very distinct memory growing up of my dad getting a ladder and climbing up on top of our two-story house and then pulling the ladder up and leaning against the chimney and climbing on top of the chimney and getting a bird's nest out. And I was like four at the time. So maybe I'm making this all up, but like, I'm just, like, in retrospect, that was probably a terrible thing for my dad to do.
Yeah, it's probably pretty dangerous.
He survived. I don't know about the birds. The nest was gone though. There was no more tweeting.
Yeah, there's no teenager tweeting from the chimney or birds.
Yeah. Well, that sounds fun. Only animals in my house are the ones that we've invited in.
Yep, we just have the two now, the dog and the bird. So hopefully one of those gets gone now.
So I think that the best thing that I saw last week is where I want to go next. And I saw something that I've never seen before. It was in the East Carolina game. East Carolina was playing against Memphis, and CJ Mayhew threw 9 innings for East Carolina, gave up 0 hits, 9 strikeouts, 1 walk. And that sounds like it could have been a no-hitter because he threw 9 no-hit innings. But the Memphis starting pitcher, Landon Gartman, threw 8 innings, no-hit innings. So both pitchers had no-hitters going through the 8th before East Carolina finally cracked for a hit in the 9th. But game ended up going tied 0-0 into extras before East Carolina won that game 4-1 in the 13th inning at Memphis. So that was the starting pitchers combined for 17 innings, gave up 5 walks, struck out 19 batters, gave up no hits. Those are a couple quality starts.
Yeah, that is a pretty nice weekend, or pretty nice weekend for like a whole pitcher, but it's in one game. So it's really, really condensed.
Yeah. It was pretty impressive. And East Carolina as a whole has been pretty impressive of late. This is a team that opening weekend got swept by Bryant. So everything has been going much better for East Carolina since that happened. So Kyle, what was the best thing that you saw this past weekend?
So yeah, the best thing I saw this week was done by Long Beach State. They had the first no-hitter in program history, the first solo no-hitter in program history over the weekend. It was done by Jawaron Watts Brown. Sorry, Mr. Watts Brown. I don't know how to pronounce your first name, but it was a 9-inning complete game shutout done with no hits and only 1 walk, which means really close to a perfect game also. So hats off to you and Long Beach State program, who came in with medium high expectations and has kind of fallen short like the rest of the Big West this year. But it's whenever you get to do something for the first time in a program like that, then that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool. I think it's a cool thing about baseball is that even when you have a disappointing season by the expectations you might have had, there's still some really cool individual accomplishments and team accomplishments that you can have that make it worth showing up to the ballpark. So it's pretty special day for Long Beach.
Yeah, you never know when a no-hitter can happen, which is, always cool.
Yeah. Exactly. So let's move on to talking about the brand new top 50 this week, because for the first time in 6 weeks, there was a little bit of controversy at number one. So number one in our top 50 this week is Tennessee for the 7th straight week, but Oregon State at number 2 is creeping up on them. The actually entire top 8 is the same as a week ago, which is always a fun little phenomenon when teams that you think should do well actually do well. So number three, Virginia Tech, 4, Oklahoma State, 5, Arkansas, 6, Miami, 7, Stanford, 8, Gonzaga. That's all the same. And then Virginia and Notre Dame both slip up a spot. So that's the top 10. And I know I thought about it a little bit. Did you think about when we were making the top 50 about moving Oregon State ahead of Tennessee, or is it still pretty much a no doubter for you right now that Tennessee is the best team in the country?
Yeah, I definitely thought about it. After seeing that there was like that game two was kind of delayed, I was like, man, they have a real chance to lose the series for the first time all season. I was thinking that if Oregon State took care of business, even lost the game, that they might have a chance. But I mean, I don't think we can react too much to a one weekend or really a one day, 24 hour like result. I think if it happens again, if they lose maybe another midweek and another game or two this weekend, then yeah. But
yeah, the perceived gap
definitely is ahead of what
the perceived gap is shrunk between Tennessee and Oregon State for sure. I think that is definitely goes without saying. And that one more series loss for Tennessee, I think it's going to be, I would say almost certain that Oregon State would pass them up if they keep winning.
Yeah, I think I agree.
But I would say I felt the same way. If you look at their resumes right now, Tennessee is a few games ahead of Oregon State in terms of overall record, 42-6 versus 38-9, both top 40 strength of schedules. Tennessee has 12 Q1 wins, Oregon State 10. Oregon State has a ton of Q2 wins. Tennessee has a good number, a lot of Q4 wins, and that's kind of that non-conference strength schedule. Oregon State definitely has that edge over Tennessee. They both lost one series. Oregon State lost a series at home to Stanford. Tennessee just lost that series on the road at Kentucky because of that extra flavor of being on the road versus Oregon State losing their series at home. It's a kind of equivalent to me in my mind, like losing to a top 75 team on the road is similar to losing to a top 20 team at home. Maybe I would say Oregon State's loss is probably a little bit less bad if I had to choose between the two, but Tennessee has still done a few things that are very impressive on their resume, like sweeping at Vanderbilt. That's not something teams do a lot, sweeping at Florida. So there's some pretty darn impressive things on that resume still.
Yeah, and then statistically, like, they're both really good teams, but I think Tennessee just is slightly better overall. They have the number one staff ERA in the country. They have the number seven team WOBA. They're slugging like crazy. They've hit the most home runs in the country so far, and they're doing that all against an overall better, tougher schedule. I didn't actually look at the strength schedule, but it was just kind of the perceived SEC versus Pac-12.
That's a tricky thing is that right now Tennessee actually has the worst strength of schedule by about 15 spots because their non-conference strength schedule is outside the top 200. So they scheduled really weak in the non-con. But I would say that the SEC, I mean, that's what the RPI suggests and what some other metrics suggest is that the SEC is deeper than the Pac-12.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I guess Tennessee, like this weekend, the one thing that they did that was a little bit uncharacteristic was gave up a few errors. They had two errors in the first loss in the game on like that continued on Saturday, and then two more errors in the second game that day. So just they dropped from, I think they were top five in team fielding percentage, and now they're number 11. Oregon State, on the other hand, is number one in fielding percentage. So they're they're really compatible teams and comparable teams, I guess. So I would it's close, I guess.
Yeah, I am very excited about what Oregon State brings to the table. I think that they're healthier now. I think Jacob Melton had a ridiculous weekend for Oregon State, and Steve Parkers has a piece on the website right now about Oregon State's series win. And I think that Oregon State is peaking at the right time. They have a few tough series left on their schedule. So they have just two more conference series at Arizona and at home against UCLA. Both those teams have won 30 plus games. So there's no reason to fear about their RPI. I mean, both of those series will be series that will boost their RPI. And the gap between Tennessee and Oregon State is actually fairly narrow. So we'll get to this on Wednesday's podcast. I think that at least we need to consider the fact that Oregon State could be the number one overall seed come tournament time.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities that Oregon State just continues to win and win the Pac-12 regular season and tournament. I think that might do it if they just like don't lose the rest of the way and Tennessee has stumbles a little bit and he doesn't win the SEC tournament. But yeah, that's kind of projecting and taking the whole resume that like into consideration.
All right, Kyle, I have two bits of trivia for you right now. I'll Venmo you $10 right now if you can get one of these right. So Tennessee had not dropped a series all year until this weekend. There's only one D1 team who has not dropped a series, or sorry, who has won all of their series this year. Do you know that team?
Ooh, Wofford?
Not a bad guess, but not a correct guess. You want one more shot at it?
No, that is okay.
So the one team who has won all of their series is UConn. UConn hit 40 wins over the weekend. So UConn, is cruising through the Big East, I would say. They are 14-1 in conference and 26-7 outside of conference. But now that you mentioned Wofford, I want to go look into it. I think they lost just one series this year. Yeah, they lost. So not a bad guess.
They lost like a weekend at the beginning of the year. They lost like a 2 out of 3 to Monmouth and Marist, kind of a thing.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Second point of trivia question: you get a shot at redemption. Which team has the longest winning streak in the country right now? This one like blew my mind.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that's a little bit of a hint. So I will tell you who has the second longest winning streak right now. UConn has won nine games in a row. So they're doing well in that regard as well.
My joke guess was Alcorn.
I don't know where Alcorn State. They're not on the list, so that must mean they lost their last game.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Why don't you tell me?
Columbia has won 19 games in a row. That is a heck of a win streak. So they dropped the series to Penn, they played one midweek game at St. John's, and then flash forward like 2 months later, maybe not quite. Yeah, a month and a half later, and they haven't lost a game since then.
Wow.
And to their credit now, their RPI is at 52 and Penn's RPI is at 42. So if you had two top 55 RPI teams in the Ivy League in week 13, if you play that bad at the beginning of the year, you probably would have won a lot of money.
Yeah, definitely would not have taken that bet. But they're coming for that Ivy League crown. I mean, aren't they in the lead?
They are. Yeah, they're in the lead right now. Penn just needs to win one of its last three games to clinch a spot in the championship. And then Columbia and Penn will play a 2 out of 3 series for the championship. That's how the Ivy League does it, just the top two teams.
That's smart. Yeah, kind of like get rid of the RPI, like dropping games against those bottom seeds, you know?
Yeah, and I don't think the Ivy will get a second bid because it's just, it's not in their cards. But when you have two top like 75 teams going at it in your conference tournament for a pretty small mid-major league, that's like a heck of a year for the Ivy League. That's pretty cool. There's going to be two really good teams going at it for a shot at the NCAA tournament. That's exactly what you want if you're a fan of the sport in general, is these strong mid-major teams getting into the NCAA tournament and seeing what they can do. That's how you get a Cinderella right there.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. That's really cool.
All right, so let's move on to a really fun topic for me, and that is the pick'em from last week. And when I first looked at this, I was like, oh boy, this was a great week for me. In retrospect, it was a very good week for me, but you had some weird anomalies that are still kind of playing out, and one of them has just resolved itself. But long story short, I'm sitting at 72 points, and you're sitting at 67, so... you can't see it at home, but I'm doing a nice little pat on my own back because 9 out of 10 possible points from this week, while you just got a measly 3 out of 10. But big asterisk there. Your 4-point series ended in
three out of six.
Yeah, it's more of a 3 out of 6 because your 4-point series ended in a 1-1-1 tie. So we'll give you an extra series this week so you have a chance to make that up. But yeah, you also had that Maryland pick, and Maryland ended up playing that final game against Rutgers today, and Maryland did in fact win it. So you end up getting that one, but for a while it was looking pretty bleak, but Maryland got you those 3 points right there, which was a nice boost for you. But let's take a little bit of a look back at some of the action from last week. Ole Miss did in fact beat Missouri, and Ole Miss kept their postseason hopes alive. I think we can finally take Missouri off of like any chance of getting into the postseason. They're kind of done for. I think they will be known as that team from the SEC who played a lot of teams closer than you really would have thought, but never quite got enough of it going to actually end up building a tournament resume that was worth much. 10 games below 500, not going to do it for you in conference play. Beyond that, Santa Barbara did take that series at Irvine. Irvine knocked Santa Barbara off once. It was a pretty tight series, but Santa Barbara got the win. They are going to the NCAA tournament. They have all but clinched the Big West title. So Santa Barbara is more than in just the driver's seat there.
I gotta stop giving you UC Santa Barbara series. I just keep like, they keep winning. So
where are they at? They're like 20-3 or something in the Big West. Like they're 21-3. Yeah, they are cruising through the Big West. Give me it again. They're playing Dixie State this weekend. I'll take that. I'll pick that series for you.
Not gonna do that.
Yeah. So. And good news for the Gauchos, like their RPI is up to 30. I know the Big West has been tough for them in terms of getting good RPI games. I don't think they're going to be they're not hosting, like not with that RPI and with what the Big West has done. But like, I think there's a shot they end up as a 2 seed. Knowing kind of what the committee does, they'll probably end up as like the 3 seed in the Stanford regional or something like that, because it always feels like some of those West Coast teams kind of end up being a little bit overseeded, like they get a little bit tougher regional. But you never quite know. But Santa Barbara's put together a nice little season so far. Texas did take that series at West Virginia. They had a doubleheader on Saturday. Texas won both those games, and that series was over in the matter of 8 hours. And they dropped game 3. Man, I don't know what to think about Texas. 34-17, 17 in the RPI. That feels like a host team from the Big 12. And you look at that Big 12 record and they're 11-10 in sixth place. And you're like, that doesn't feel like a host team anymore.
That's not going to do it now.
And I've spent a lot of time looking at the Big 12 and the remaining games left on the schedule. I think if I were to guess, I think they're going to move up a spot or two, but I'm really on the fence about whether or not there's going to be enough action ahead of them to get them high enough so that they can end up hosting. But their early non-conference dominance really has set them up to have that RPI. So there's going to be a few, I think, examples in this year's selection committee, their meetings. There's going to be some interesting case studies and what the committee cares about. I think Texas could end up being one of those teams with the highest RPI that doesn't end up hosting if things, you know, don't go quite their way in terms of Big 12 standings. And, you know, it's a matter of just racking up Big 12 wins right now. All they have left is hosting Kansas. They sweep that, go to 14-10 in Big 12 play. I think that opens a door for them. So they need that sweep in that last series against Kansas.
I don't know if that would do it, but that's the next close chance because of RPI in the Big 12. TCU is above them in the standings at 36 in the RPI. That's not going to do it.
Yeah, I don't want to spend too much time about it because I had like the strings on a board, like murder mystery, like detail going through the Big 12 on this. But like Oklahoma State and Texas Tech play each other, and Oklahoma and West Virginia play each other. And so like there's just enough games ahead of them where like there's guaranteed losses for teams that are currently ahead of them, that the four teams ahead of them have 8-7-7 and 8 losses. They're at 10. If they manage to keep that number at 10 losses, I do see a path forward for them passing up a few more teams. And they have the head-to-head over West Virginia and Oklahoma. So, you know, if they end up at third in the Big 12, 14-10, top 15 RPI, that feels like a host bid to me. But that's kind of a big if right now.
Big if.
So those are the three that I got correct. I whiffed on Georgia Tech at Clemson because hashtag ACC chaos. So I'm glad I put that down at one point because Clemson swept Georgia Tech. They swept.
I don't understand.
A week after.
That's why I gave it to you.
this is literally like South Carolina 2.0. I was like, South Carolina's dead. 2 weeks ago, I picked against them. South Carolina won that series. Same thing. I was like, I don't see Clemson still fighting for much. And then they go and sweep Georgia Tech. So find me a struggling team, Kyle, and give it to me to pick, and they're guaranteed to sweep.
All right. You can do that. So my series, we already touched on the Louisville 1-1 tie for my 4-pointer.
There should never be a tie in a power conference game.
Yeah, I think I saw was that they can't do another inning after like 4:30 or something like that on a Sunday.
Yeah, they had some travel curfew on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
I really want to know more about Louisville, and we learned exactly nothing.
It is the most frustrating result. I agree. We looked at these last 9 games Louisville has an ACC play, and we kind of were like, okay, this is going to tell us a lot. You know, win these games, they could be a top 8 seed. You know, it's like they win their division, but then they go and do this. They split the series. It's not it's not a bad thing for the resume, but I don't feel like I know more about Louisville now than I did at the beginning of the weekend.
Yeah. They just need to go 3-3-3 the rest of the way to make it even more frustrating.
I swear, if they have 2 more ties before the season ends, I'm going to quit. I'm going to delete our account. It's going to be done.
We're done. Yep. My next one was Maryland at Rutgers. Maryland won that series today. We already touched on that one a little bit. And the other two were SEC results. Florida went on the road and I don't think swept Mississippi State.
They swept Mississippi State. That was just like that was one of the biggest shocks for me. Like, I thought Florida was probably the better team. You don't go into the Dude and sweep Mississippi State. And
that was the nail in the coffin.
Yeah, it's looking like more that Mississippi State is going to join the likes of Coastal Carolina from a few years ago and a few of those other teams that have failed to make the NCAA tournament the year after they won the national championship.
Yep, that's too bad. And then the other result was the 1-pointer I had, Arkansas at Auburn. Arkansas won that series in game 3. You talked me into this one. It was just a 1-pointer, but you talked me into picking Auburn, the trendy hot team at home hosting. But now I don't know what to do with the three-way tie atop the SEC West. There's Arkansas, Auburn, and A&M all have beaten each other. And A&M won one of those series at home, lost one at home. Arkansas did both on the road. I don't know what to do with that.
Arkansas does have a 2-game lead over.
I know, but Arkansas lost the series to A&M. A&M has the series lost also to Auburn, and I don't know. It's just it's so circular. And then Arkansas, I think, has a pretty tough schedule going forward.
I think that's when you look at standings, like head-to-head matters when standings are tied, in my opinion. But when a team has a 2-game lead over LSU and A&M, and then 3-game lead over Auburn, Arkansas is the best team in the SEC West. I think that's how you have to interpret it. You have to interpret conference results in aggregate when head-to-head doesn't quite add up.
Yeah, okay. I think I agree. It was just frustrating that I listened to you.
I mean, it's kind of that is your responsibility to use my advice / tricks with discretion.
Yeah, you also tricked me into picking Florida because Hunter Barker was out and they are picking against Florida, but dang, oh well.
Yeah, it's crazy. I read a stat that like the pitching staff from Florida, like none of them were in the starting rotation like a month ago or something. Like, I don't know. Like, they're just like it's only at Florida where you have like 20 guys who have, MLB prospects in your bullpen that you can just be like, you know what, let's try someone else and see what happens. Like, Florida's not had like the world's greatest year, but like, they're talented, especially in their pitching staff. So they were able to put together some good enough pitching performances. And, spoiler alert for Wednesday's podcast, I think Florida is a sneaky underdog for hosting a regional.
Man, I don't, but We'll discuss that on Wednesday's pod.
Only two games below 500 in the SEC with six very winnable games. They go 5-1, 6-0 in that. They're at 17-13, 16-14. They have number 12 in the RPI. That's a host bid for me. You heard it here first. Florida's going to host.
I think they just need to cancel the game against Bethune-Cookman this week and to not drop their RPI.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think that a lot of teams with borderline RPIs should cancel RPI games against 200. Or games
I had RPI the 200. Same thought today. I was like, they should do flex non-conference games, and they should do flex midweek non-conference games at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. In large population states where you have a lot of college baseball teams, like the state of Texas or like, I don't know, Georgia, Florida, like California, where you can kind of do last minute travel arrangements. I think there should just be like a list of like, hey, if you're top 50 in the RPI, we're going to schedule you the second to last week of the year to get an extra little boost for our schedule.
Be ready.
Yeah. But logistically, I recognize that would be hard.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. But I think the SEC and the ACC and Big 12 would like be incentivized to do that if it meant like getting a team in or not getting a team in.
Yes.
Well,
it's my dream.
So that was a 1-2-1 week for me. Really, it's just a 1-2, and we'll add another series this week. But
up next on the podcast, we invite College Baseball Nation contributor Matt Sefcovic to the podcast. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. It's a fun time of college baseball season. So rolling into May, ready to see what happens the rest of the season.
Yeah, and it's been a long time coming. You've been doing a lot of great coverage for us for a while, especially in the ACC, and that's why we're bringing you on right now to talk ACC baseball on the podcast. There's a lot going on in the ACC, a lot to figure out in terms of postseason seeding, in terms of conference standings, and I want to start off with talking with you and Kyle about what's going on with Louisville, because if you look at them and their lineup, you think, man, this was one of the most potent lineups in the country. At any moment, they could put up a four spot, you know, like one big inning and the game could be out of reach, except for that pitching staff, the ERA north of 5. And you kind of are left wondering if pitching wins championships, can Louisville pull it off? So I know you spent a lot of time thinking about Louisville baseball. So let's start you off there. What's going on with Louisville? Do they have enough pitching firepower to have some staying power in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, it's been a really weird season this year for Louisville. You know, they've got at the plate, they've got four batters with 10 home runs or more already this season. Six of their starters are batting over 300, over 9 runs a game. But then they have to go play defense and pitch. You know, like you said, their ERA is close to 5.5. They're still tinkering with the weekend rotation. You know, he's changed it the past couple weekends. So really don't know who he's going to throw out there from weekend to weekend. Pitchers are walking over 6 batters a game. But then you have this past Tuesday, you know, they went down to Nashville and shut out Vandy. You know, not the best Vandy team that we're used to over the past couple seasons, but it's still Vanderbilt. And then this weekend against Wake, they allowed 2 runs in one game and 5 runs in another game that went 12 innings. So they're showing bright spots, but then the first game against Wake, they give up 14 runs. So you just really don't know who's going to show up.
Yeah. My big concern there is in a regional, if let's say they end up hosting, like go through the winner's bracket, maybe there's a pretty easy path for them. Lose one game before the weekend's over. And I don't know if a Louisville team can make it out of a loser's bracket. That would be my biggest concern. Like, do they have enough pitching to win that fourth or fifth game if they end up going, you know, a little bit deeper into a regional because they're in the loser's bracket?
I think that's the biggest thing is just their depth. You know, if you do get into their bullpen, who's going to be the guy to step up? Because it seems like they're really just throwing a pitcher out there for an inning or two, letting him face, you know, 6, 7, 8 batters, then going to the next guy. You know, if he walks a batter or two, just pull him out. So he's got a really short leash with the bullpen right now. So I'm curious to see who, if anyone, is going to step up the rest of the season. But, you know, Louisville's right there in a hosting spot, but that can quickly change with Virginia and Virginia Tech as the final two series they have this season.
I love that segue because I am fascinated. We're building a new brand new field of 64 every week with projections. And on Wednesday, you're going to be releasing a little bit of bracketology on the podcast. So it's something that Kyle and I are thinking a lot about. And I want to hear what both of y'all think. Louisville or Notre Dame, who is winning the ACC Atlantic? Right now, Louisville's at 15-8-1. And Notre Dame's at 13-8. So it's technically Notre Dame's one game back. Man, I hate ties. Makes that math a little bit weird looking. But like you just said, Virginia Tech, that's not an easy end of the year.
Yeah, you know, and one thing to keep in mind too is Notre Dame is going to play, if I'm not mistaken, three less ACC games than Louisville's going to play because they had a couple games that were canceled. So that could come into play a little bit. But I have a feeling, I think Notre Dame is probably going to win the division. I know they finished the season at Miami, before that they get Pitt at home. You got to think they'll probably win that series, win two, you know, could sweep Pitt. So I think going into Miami, it's a big series, but I think Notre Dame will end up edging Louisville out in the Atlantic division.
Yeah, that's like a easier overall finish, like easier average finish, I guess, because especially with the tough road series Louisville has this weekend, and then that tie messes everything up. We hate ties.
Yeah, I think that like that Pittsburgh series, it's not going to be a walk in the park for Notre Dame.
No.
Pitt is playing for their postseason survival because their RPI is at 59 right now. They are above 500 in ACC play, and kind of feels like if Pitt hovers around that mark in ACC play, their RPI might not hold them back. But if they get swept against Louisville, they're like easy out for me. That would really knock them out with that subpar RPI. All right, so I hear Notre Dame from Matt. Kyle, you going Notre Dame in the Atlantic as well?
Yep, that's Notre Dame for me.
Man, I hate reaching unanimous consensus on a podcast. I think I'm leaning Notre Dame right now. I'm not like horribly convicted because it is only six games left and Louisville does have a one game lead. I think that running up against Virginia and Virginia Tech, that's that end of the year is going to be enough to allow Notre Dame to pass up Louisville.
I think we just needed to learn more about Louisville this weekend, and we didn't get the chance to. We just touched on this in the pod. I picked Louisville to win that series at Wake, and then they went 1-1-1. So we didn't learn anything more about them, like in the standings. They 1-1, lost one, tied one, and I really hope that they would have either won the series or lost the series in convincing fashion. So Notre Dame has done more on the season. I think we joked on this a few weeks ago that they either swept or have been swept in all of their series. That streak was broken against Boston College, but
Boston College is the only ACC team that they have both won and lost to. Everyone else, it's all or nothing.
I think the series between Louisville and Wake Forest this weekend like sums up Louisville's season. You know, they lose the first game by, I don't know, 9 runs, win the second game by a couple runs, and then the ninth inning they have the lead and give up a home run in the ninth inning to tie the game to go into extras, and then the series and game are both tied. So I think that's just the most Louisville thing that could have happened against Wake Forest this weekend.
All right, so I want to stick in the Atlantic a little bit longer. There's, I think, two other teams in the Atlantic that have a very intriguing pass to and maybe through the postseason. Currently, the third place team in the Atlantic is Florida State at 13-11 overall, 2.5 games back of all of this. It feels like a lot of ground to make up in terms of winning the division, but I think they arguably have the best pitching staff in the ACC in terms of the three starters they put out there. Bryce Hubbert, Parker Messick, both likely top two rounds in the MLB draft. Carson Montgomery maybe hasn't quite lived up to expectations as what you would think when he got to campus, but has turned into a very solid starter. And I think when you look at that, you get really excited about this Florida State team.
Yeah.
But when you look at some of the issues they've had in the bullpen and some of the issues they've had on offense, similarly to how, Matt, you mentioned Louisville still figuring out their pitching staff, Florida State's really still figuring out their lineup. I mean, this is, you know, normally the point in the season where you're maybe making small tweaks, but you have a pretty good idea of who's batting where. Florida State is not exactly in that position. So can I put some money on Florida State to make a regional super regional run, or is there question marks? Are they big enough to hold them back?
I think very similar to what we talked about Louisville, I think you have almost the exact opposite with Florida State, right? You know, they're batting 262 as a team, 215th in the country. You know, their ERA is 3.75, which is 15th in the country. So you have the complete opposite effect that we were talking about with Louisville. And more so, the two starters, Messick and Hubbard, like we talked about, their ERA is a little over 2.5. The rest of their staff is closer to 4.5. Mm-hmm. So when those two guys aren't on the mound, there's a really big drop off. That's my biggest concern with them. I think they can make a regional because, or a super regional, because with two arms, you can almost feel your way through a regional if they play their cards right. But I worry about once they get to the super regional, what would happen from that point going forward.
Yeah, I think that it's what I'm hearing is basically that Louisville and Florida State need to combine into a super team, because if you do that, give Florida State the staff to Louisville, that is a team that's going to Omaha right there for sure.
I thought the exact same thing when I was looking at the stats earlier. I was like, if Louisville could borrow Florida State's pitching staff or vice versa, you'd have one hell of a baseball team.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Kyle, you have a take on this. Is Florida State's ceiling going to be limited by the fact that they can't really quite put together enough runs? I mean, I think that it's really interesting to think about how maybe they could set up for a 2 out of 3 game series pretty well, but
yeah,
I mean, on the way to the national championship, there's two of those double elimination tournaments, right? Both the regional and College World Series start off with those double elimination tournaments that I think would be pretty tough for Florida State.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, I think they do set up well for that 2 out of 3 round, but I just don't know if they can get out of the regional type setup, especially if their offense just happens to not get like squeak enough runs by in one game, and then they have to play 5 games in a weekend or 4 games in a weekend. That might mess them up.
But I think Matt's point is a fair one, is that coaches use their pitching staff differently in regionals than they do in the regular season. And that's because regionals are different than anything you do in the regular season. So yeah, you're not going to see Messick pitch twice in a weekend on, you know, in a regular season series. But like, for sure, if there's an elimination game and Messick has had a day or two of rest, you might see him go out for 2 innings or something like that, because they, like, you know, no holds bar, right? So like, maybe they can piece something together there.
And, you know, I don't think they have enough confidence, depending on who they, you know, play in the first round to throw off if they're hosting. But if they could possibly do that and win the first game, and you've got Messick and Hubbard in your back pocket for the next two games, you know, you got to feel pretty confident. But I just don't think Mike Martin Jr. would do that, knowing that he really doesn't have a whole lot of confidence in who his third guy would be.
That's a really interesting point. If Florida State does manage to get to the host line, they could put a guy like Carson Montgomery, who's a 4.5 ERA, which is, you know, not quite the same level, but a pretty good arm that has a good shot at beating a 4 seed. Win that game, and all of a sudden it's a really clear path, but, you know, lose that game, make it real.
Yeah, lose that game, I don't think they can dig themselves out of the hole.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's a lot of ifs to the third place in the Atlantic, 25 in the RPI. I think Florida State's on the list of teams that are feeling like they have a chance at hosting a regional, but I wouldn't put them in the top 16 as
of right now. Not at this point, no.
So one last question from the Atlantic for both of you guys. What the heck do we do with Clemson? Because they are 9-14 in the ACC, but they're 31-17 overall, and that feels like a pretty solid record. And they're 19th in the RPI. They've had some pretty solid series wins, especially in non-conference. I mean, they swept South Carolina. They swept Indiana. Indiana's a little bit worse than they have been in years past. But, I mean, there's some things on this resume that you look at and you're like, man, just add one or two ACC wins to Clemson's record, and this is an easy tournament team. But 9-14, 5 games below 500 in conference, that feels pretty tough to get in. Clemson finishes at Virginia and then hosting Boston College. How many games do you think they need to win there? Is that a 4-2 down the stretch, 5-1 down the stretch in ACC play to get in?
I was looking at that earlier. I think 4-1 would probably get it done, depending on how the 4-1 come. You know, if you're Clemson, if you win 4 games, you'd probably like to go 2-1 in both series and win both series. Mm-hmm. But if you win all 3 against Boston College and 1 against Virginia, you're probably not feeling quite as confident heading into the ACC tournament. But they've won three of their last four series. They're hot right now. But I don't know, run into Virginia the this upcoming weekend is going to be a tough task.
Yeah. It is wild that we're talking about this Clemson team as a team that might make the tournament when they're also probably equally likely to miss the ACC tournament altogether. Right.
One thing I was reading about them, I didn't realize this, that Will Taylor, he's one of the best freshmen in the entire conference. He played for the football team actually this fall and tore his ACL. He came back this past weekend and had a really good weekend for them. So I know they are really excited about him. Monty Lee talked about him quite a bit. So, you know, interested to see how that plays out the rest of the season. And you got to think, they don't think they're in the position to make the tournament, or they wouldn't have put him in this late in the season. Mm-hmm. Like, if you got a guy like that and you know, you're out of contention or you don't think you're gonna make the tournament, you just shelf him for the rest of the year so you don't, you know, risk furthering his injury. So I think that was something interesting of note when I was looking at the Clemson's roster today.
Still playing to win. Yeah, I think that is Clemson's an interesting story. I think they could easily turn into this year's Virginia. I don't know if I would see them get into Omaha, but Virginia made a really strong run at the end of last year in conference play that got them in the tournament. And it turns out they were pretty darn good, and they made a nice run. Clemson maybe can pull off something similar in the ACC this year. All right, let's close on one thing in the ACC. Let's go to the Coastal, because Miami and Virginia Tech are atop the Coastal. Miami's at 17-7, Virginia Tech at 14-8. Virginia Tech has that head-to-head win over Miami. Two games back, who's winning the Coastal?
I'm going to go with Miami. I think even though Virginia Tech won that series, who is it that – who does Miami finish with again?
All right.
So at Florida State and Notre Dame at home.
They've got a tough schedule too. But
they do.
And then Virginia Tech, you know, they host Louisville this weekend. So,
but then they also host Duke the weekend
after. Then they get Duke the weekend after, right? I don't know. That one's tough. I'm going to go with Virginia Tech. I'm going Virginia Tech on the Coastal Division.
All right, you're flipping. You're switching from Miami to Virginia Tech.
I'm going Virginia Tech.
Yeah, it's two games is a lot to make up in only a stretch of six games, but that's a pretty big difference in terms of strength of schedule remaining and also in terms of what's on the road and what's at home. I think if I were to predict, I think Virginia Tech goes 5-1 in those games. I mean, that might be a little bit of a bold prediction, but I'm going to say they win that series against Louisville, they sweep Duke. And so that means that if Miami goes 3-3 against Florida State and Notre Dame, Virginia Tech would be tied, and Virginia Tech would have
that. And Virginia Tech would win based on the tie. Yeah.
That doesn't seem unreasonable, but I could also see a few other scenarios playing out.
Yeah, I could definitely see that happening.
You beat me to try and figure out how the math works on the tie there, because Virginia Tech has the two cancellations from the Notre Dame series. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think I would. Ooh. John, what'd you say?
I'm going Virginia Tech here by hair.
Yeah, I think I will too. Are we all consensus?
Once again, unanimous winner. We actually are both picking, all three of us are picking the second place teams right now.
Underdog.
In both divisions. So
I think if Virginia Tech didn't finish with Duke, I think I would be on Miami. But the fact that they've got Duke to end the season at home, and all six of their final games are at home as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that sets up really nicely. I think it's going to be really interesting to see. I think the psychology of the end of the season is always really interesting, because you know, all these teams, Louisville, Notre Dame, Miami, Virginia Tech, are going to be in the tournament no matter what. They are playing for something. They're all playing to host. I think there's reasonable odds that all four of them actually end up hosting. So then what maybe they're really all playing for is a top 8 seed. It's important, but maybe not quite as important as being a top 16 seed. So it's, you know, it's going to be interesting to see who's able to kind of push through the end of the season, the grind that is the very end of any college baseball season, and who's most motivated to make that last push at division win, which could be a nice little feather in the hat for the difference between a top 8 or a top 16. All right, Matt. Well, thank you for joining us. Love talking ACC baseball. There's a lot of exciting things happening. For the briefest of moments last night, the ACC passed up the SEC in conference RPI, And it switched back with a few West Coast finals that, you know, the magic algorithm that is the RPI, SEC took a small lead. But the point stands is that the ACC is probably the deepest it's been in a long time, and is arguably the best conference in the country. Arguably, because I think there's an argument for the SEC for sure still, but I think that argument's a little bit tighter this year than in other years. So it's fascinating seeing how the ACC plays out.
Yeah, it's been a really fun season, and I think the biggest thing with ACC this year is you don't have the teams at the bottom like aren't as weak as they have been in the past. Obviously, you have a couple teams that are struggling this year, but like we talked about earlier, Pitt is, you know, in contention right now to get an at-large bid. You've got teams like that have stepped up. Virginia Tech, where have they come from? You know, they're a top five team in the country. We haven't seen, you know, Virginia Tech be, you know, this relevant in a long time in college baseball. Pitt hasn't made the tournament since, I think, 95. So it's fun to see some of these teams that aren't historically powerhouses in the ACC kind of step up and make the conference, you know, every week. It's fun. And you never know what's going to happen right now with this conference.
Perfectly said. You never know what to expect. Kyle and I have felt that week in and week out during the pick'em. I think we've gotten like every ACC series wrong. So if you're looking for ACC takes, just take whatever we do and do the opposite.
Just do the complete opposite of that.
It is impossible to pick the ACC. All right. Well, Matt, thanks for joining us.
All right. I appreciate y'all having me on.
Thanks for listening to the College Baseball Nation podcast. If you haven't already, please rate us on Apple Podcasts. Also, follow us on our social media at College Ball and That on Twitter and Instagram, and maybe we'll talk about a question that you send us on the podcast. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.